I think we need to demonstrate to people that the act of expressing yourself through a creative means, let's say songwriting, for example, is so important to your spirit or, you know, your humanity. You need to do that to connect with yourself, to connect with other people. We need to do that.
Welcome to Lessons in Creativity, where we'll explore the creative process across different disciplines and learn how to harness this natural part of our human experience. I'm your host, Jenna Massey. My guest today is Kelly Bruno, singer, songwriter, and one-woman band whose music is indie folk bourbon for the soul. She's been honing her artistry through many years of performing and recording, and she also composed the theme music for this podcast. Kelly's process is fascinating, and I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did. Here we go with Kelly. Thank you so much for being here and being one of our very first guests on the podcast. Woo! Excited to dive into your creative process as a songwriter. So to start, I would love to just go back to your childhood, Kelly, at age 6, 7, 8. So talk to me about how creativity was showing up at that point in your life and, you know, where all this musical inclination came from.
Sure. So thinking back to when I was 6, I had started piano lessons. Mm-hmm. So that was definitely a big part of my life at that point. And I really liked it, but, you know, I wasn't like, at, you know, 6 years old, I wasn't like, I'm going to be a piano prodigy and I'm going to practice for, you know, 2 hours a day. Like, you know, I was just a typical kid. But I was also singing in, you know, my church choir. So singing and piano were kind of the like musical things that I was involved in at that point. And I remember, I think in like second or third grade, I started writing silly little songs about my teachers, which was just a fun way to get my thoughts and feelings out about my teachers, whether positive or otherwise. So that was kind of, you know, just a fun little thing that I did. And I never really even thought about that until like over the last couple of years when I've been thinking back in my life about like songwriting and when did this start? And I would be like, oh yeah, I used to write songs about my teachers and like share them with my friends and we would like sing them together. But yeah, piano is definitely
the starting point.
Ginormous. Yes, it is the foundation of my musical knowledge. So that's when it all began.
Were there like musicians in your family? Were there like, did you have that influence around you?
Yes. So my mom, she played piano like in college. She was actually a music education major. So she always sang and she played piano, but it, you know, piano didn't really stick for her. So she, you know, doesn't play it anymore. So that was one thing. And my dad isn't, I mean, I think he would claim that he's not musical, but I think he is because mm-hmm. whenever he hums along to things, he has a very good sense of pitch. And then his sister, my Aunt Mary, was and still is a huge musical inspiration for me. She introduced me to the guitar at a very young age. I didn't start playing until I was in high school, but she was very musical, very like always singing, always humming, making up songs. Like she, oh my God, she made up this song. Or like it's a parody of Hark the Herald Angels Sing. So it goes, Hark the Herald Angels Sing, let's all go to Burger King. Anyway, so maybe that's where my songwriting came from.
Wow, I'm seeing a lot of parallels already. I love it.
Mm-hmm. So am I.
So early on, you know, songs in second, third grade, your Aunt Mary being an influence, piano. When did you first start to say, you know, songwriting is something I want to go after or artistry, being a musician? How did that, when did that start to take form? And then at what point, when did it first start to be like the target? And then two, when did you first started taking on the identity of songwriter or musician or artist?
Those are a lot of good questions. I would say musician-wise, like me wanting to be a musician, I probably started to get that idea in the back of my mind in high school and got more serious about it in college. I think a big turning point for me was when I decided to major in music at Bucknell because my freshman year, I was just a film major. And I was on the softball team. And it was like, well, it's a D1 sport. So you have to eat with the team. You have to practice with the team. You have to do your homework with the team. Every hour of your day is spent with the team. And I was like, oh, I want to do music stuff too. So I quit. I started doing music stuff. And then I was like, what am I doing? This is not just an extracurricular for me. Like, this is my life. Mm-hmm. I have to pursue this more seriously. So, and I think around that same time, maybe towards, you know, the end of college, especially when I graduated, I think I got a little bit more serious about songwriting. But that's still been a process. When have I taken on the identity of songwriter? Maybe not until like recently, over the last couple of years. I mean, you know, I've been writing songs forever, but I think once I started thinking outside the blocks, honestly, mm-hmm. and like really treating it as a craft and something I have to work at, not just something that like, oh, comes naturally to me and I'm like, okay, when I do it, I decided, you know, I really want to get better at this. So that was, yeah, more recently.
For those who don't know, can you give a little plug on what Thinking Outside the Blocks is? Because it's an amazing community.
Sure. So Thinking Outside the Blocks is a, I guess you could say, a songwriting community with workshops, lessons, songwriting challenges. That's led by Allie Moss and Bess Rogers. And it's been great. It's a community that, you know, they'll do weekly challenges where you come together and they give you a songwriting challenge and you have to write a song in a week and bring it back the next week. And but there's all these other classes about music production and harmony and music theory and, you know, songwriting, obviously. So, yeah, it's been great. And it's really made me take a closer look at my songs and my creative process. And it's inspired me to take it more seriously and to treat it as something that I should do every day, practice it every day. Instead of writing when I only feel inspired. So
yeah, love it. Yeah.
Now, whether I keep up with that is another question, but that's the intention.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're saying a couple of years ago, you started taking on the identity of songwriter. So talk to me about that. Like, why did you wait until just a couple of years ago? Cause you've been songwriting for so long. What was kind of going on internally? And
why did it take so long? I think a part of me was almost like embarrassed isn't the right word, but hesitant to share the artist inside of myself with other people. Mm-hmm. In my own head, I always knew I was a songwriter and I'm a musician and I'm an artist and like I make goofy songs and I make serious songs. But to say that to somebody else and confidently be like, no, I'm a songwriter. That's what I do. That was hard. And I guess I can't really pinpoint why, but I think there's sometimes, you know, certain people have this like disdain for artists, you know, it's like, oh, that's what you do for a living? Like, come on, get a real job. So, but, you know, whether it's your full-time job or just something that you do as a hobby, you can still consider yourself a songwriter. If you are one. I've also always been interested in so many different things. So maybe that's also a part of it. It's like, oh, I'm a soccer player and I, you know, worked for a nonprofit for a really long time and I love to rollerblade and I'm a sports fan and I'm, you know, I have lots of different interests. So I think it took me a while to whittle down and be like, oh, I'm a songwriter.
Yeah. There's this quote, things that are real have to start hidden before we can make them known to other people. I'm paraphrasing a little, but I think that is something that definitely resonates with me. And I think it resonates with others as you're going through like the creative process and even just taking on the identity. So actually something you just said prompted a question. You said you have, you're a person of many different interests. How do you think,
for better or for worse?
But I think that there's often like a connection between creativity and like many different interests as well. Mm-hmm. How does that benefit you or show up in your artistry, if at all? Is there ways that you notice it, or do you think it's more, you know, subconscious?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, one thing I have learned about myself recently is that I draw a lot of inspiration from stand-up comedy.
I love that.
Yeah. And I think it's just like the way that – I think it's the format of stand-up.
Yeah.
You know, you have jokes. Like in the beginning, you kind of introduce yourself with a story or a joke or whatever. And as the form of the comedy progresses, a lot of times there's a joke that lands that's extra funny because it references back to an earlier joke that was set up. And I feel like – it's almost like a choreographed dance. And sometimes a performance feels like that, or a song even feels like that. Like there's a form to it. There's an arc to it. But also just the like wittiness of the joke writing kind of feels to me like there's a parallel between that and songwriting. So I don't know. I just always, when I walk away from watching a really good stand-up special on Netflix or whatever it is, I feel inspired to write or pick up an instrument. And I sometimes get, you know, some songwriting ideas from that.
Wow, that's really cool. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I didn't either until recently. And I was like, ooh, this is good. I don't like all stand-up, by the way, but, you know, certain ones have been.
It's funny. I was just thinking that as you were talking, like, you have this, like, range in your songwriting. Like, you do a lot of comedy songs.
Mm-hmm.
But then you also have, and really from like the very beginning, I feel like a lot of your music has been very introspective and very like in touch with your feelings. And you even said when you started, those songs in second and third grade were kind of a way to like get your feelings and thoughts out.
Mm-hmm.
Where did that come from? Because, you know, again, I feel like your music is a lot more introspective than one might imagine. And sometimes when I'm listening to them, I'm like, how did Kelly like know, like the song Dogwood Tree, I'm like, how was she mm-hmm. so in touch with like her feelings, emotions that early on? Where did that come from?
Oh, I don't know, man. I don't know. I have always been an introspective person. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun to be in my brain. Most of the time, not all the time, but it's kind of a fun place. Like I let myself go to a state of play or imagination very easily. Like I can access that part of me like that, which I think is why I can relate to kids so well. Like
yeah.
I feel like they're still, you know, the child in me is still very much alive. But like, yeah, starting as a kid, I mean, it's kind of what my first album was about, but
right.
Growing up across the street from a park and being in nature a lot of times was just very grounding. And I don't know, it kind of set the scene for me to just be who I am and be goofy and go play in the woods and, I don't know, hang out in the tree. And but, you know, that first album was a lot of like reminiscing about that place and how it, you know, informed me as a person. But in terms of like, yeah, where the impulse to be creative came from, I don't really know, but could be genetic. I don't know.
Yeah.
Or you know what, actually another thing too that I've realized recently is growing up with my brother who is autistic, this is actually probably a huge part of
yeah.
the creativity. We you know, the way that he communicates is oftentimes through stories.
Mm.
He tells the line of a story and then I have to repeat it, or I have to do sound effects, or I have to say the line like the Disney character would say it, you know, in mm-hmm. the movie. And it was always funny voices. Like I would have to talk like Iago from, you know, Aladdin, or Simba from The Lion King, or Zazu, the bird. So there was a lot of like goofiness that my whole family had to tap into a lot.
Yeah.
So
wow.
That was a big thing. And also I was realizing too, like I think I liked beatboxing so much, or it came a little bit more naturally to me because I was always like making sound effects for his stories, like explosions and fireworks and, you know, a blimp going by. Like I can do so many different sounds. Now, whether they're good or not, I don't know, but.
Yeah. Wow. That makes a lot of sense that Ty was such a big influence. And it's also, I feel like in another thing with creativity is like, you know, thinking about ways that people who are different relate and needing to kind of meet them in different ways and like creative constraints, right, is like a big part of the creative process as well. And that's, shows up there as well. It's interesting.
Yeah. And that reminds me of one of my film. It was the film production class I took in college. Every week we had to we were in groups of like two or three, and our professor would give us a film challenge. And it was like, it was very limiting factors. Like, you can't have any dialogue, or your film has to be exactly 1 minute, and you can't use any light in the film, or you have to, I don't know, you can't edit. You have to film everything in one single shot. So there would always be a challenge. And every week we would make a film. We would come back. He would give us feedback. Very similar to thinking outside the blocks, actually. But I realized that it's actually much easier oftentimes to be creative within a set of parameters than it is to just have a blank canvas and somebody say, okay, go make something. Sometimes the better ideas come when you're forced to really hone in on something that is at first a challenge.
Wow. Okay, so let's go into your process. And maybe let's start with like Nomahegan, your first album, and then we can talk about like differences. So you think back in this to this album, like what was your process of writing, of how did it all get started?
Yeah, so it was kind of interesting for Nomahegan because when I started writing the songs that ended up being on that album, I didn't say to myself, like, I'm going to write 12 songs and I'm going to make an album. I kind of just got to a place where I looked back at all of these songs that I had written and I said, oh, I could put these together and I could release an album. So it kind of happened that way, where all the songs just came first. I wrote whenever I felt inspired. And then over the course of maybe two or three years, I sort of noticed the theme of like, okay, I'm missing my home because I moved into New York and then my parents sold that house that was across the street from the park. So there was a lot of nostalgia in the songwriting. So yeah, I decided in, you know, 2017-ish to start recording and did most of it in 2018. And then it got released later that year in November of 2018. But yeah, and really there wasn't a lot of thought behind, like, you know, obviously I'm just an independent person. I'm not working with a record label who's saying like, no, this song doesn't make the cut, or no, you need to write a song that, you know, is XYZ mood and atmosphere and tone. Like, I wasn't answering to anybody but myself. So it's literally just a collection of songs. I put it out in the world. I had no expectation of what, you know, it's going to do. It's just like, these are my thoughts in musical form.
Yeah. Wow. I love that. Specifically for some of the songs. How do you take us through maybe one of them? Like, were you journaling? Were you like, did you write the songs like right in that moment? Or did you come back to them? Or in the moment, are you like, this would make a good song? How does it kind of spark?
Yeah. Well, I can talk about Nomahegan because I remember at the time I was, so this was like 2016. I was really getting into Joni Mitchell and learning a lot of her songs on guitar. And she plays in open tuning a lot and different open tuning. So I'd always have to tune my guitar differently to be able to play her songs. And I remember – I don't remember what song – oh, it was probably Big Yellow Taxi, which is an open D tuning. So I was in open D, and a lot of my songs honestly come from me just like messing around with one song, and I start improvising, and then it leads me to an idea.
Interesting.
So yeah, I think the beginning of Nomahegan of da-da-da-da-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. I remember I was sitting on my front porch looking at the park, and I just started writing. And I was like, oh, I guess I should just write about the park because I'm looking at it.
Oh, wow. But I never knew that's how you wrote that one.
Yeah. And I actually found the original GarageBand recording with all my ideas, which was real. It's long. It's probably like 20 minutes of just idea, idea, idea.
Yeah.
But it's kind of fun to go back and listen. So that was that song. Yeah. And other times, you know, I just record a voice memo. Like the Dogwood Tree, I don't know how that started, but whenever I'm holding the ukulele, I always do this like little riff thing in the key of C. And I don't know what, you know, started that, but that's, it turned into a song. I was like, I should make this into something. And then I wrote about the tree.
I just envision you writing the song up in the dogwood tree.
That would be great. I don't know if I did that, but.
Well, that's my image.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. Keep it.
Yep. 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 When does a song and how does the song get finished?
I think it's a feeling of like, I have no, there's nothing else that I can give to this mm-hmm. song. Mm. Like the way that it exists now, I'm satisfied with it. And yeah, as to like which songs rise to the level of, oh, I want to record this and release it. Honestly, I want to record all of my music. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, some songs get discarded and I kind of forget about them. And that's okay because they're not all meant to be out in the world. But yeah, I think it's just the feeling of like, ooh, okay. If I play through it and there's nothing that bothers me about it, then I'm like, okay, it's done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. What is it like to share them? That feels to me like such a vulnerable
yeah.
process, especially like a lot of your songs are really very intimate. And
mm-hmm.
did you feel that like fear or hesitation of sharing initially? And how have you gotten over that, if so?
Yeah, I definitely have that fear every time I play a brand new song for somebody for the first time, mm-hmm. whether it's one-on-one or I'm testing it out at, you know, an open mic or something like that. But I think the more that I do it, the less fear I have mm-hmm. each time. So that's a good thing to realize. It's just like, just force yourself to do it. Force yourself to do it. Like, yes, it's going to be scary. It's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would do it. But also, I think I had to mature as a person. I don't mean mature in a way of like I was, you know, immature before, but when I was growing up, I was really shy.
Mm.
Like I really shy to the point where I probably should have had some like psychological intervention, but it worked itself out on its own because when I got to college, I think I just like opened up and blossomed and was able to like socially feel so much more comfortable and confident in myself. So my point is if I was like writing songs and trying to perform them when I was like 16, honestly, I don't think I would have had the confidence to do that. I think I had to get to a certain point in my life as a person to have the confidence to go out and perform and play songs for people. But yeah, certain songs, I don't have that like fear playing them for the first time. Mm-hmm. But I think the more, yeah, vulnerable a song is, definitely the more fear that comes with it playing it for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That resonates for sure. Okay, so then what about the second album, Company? How did you notice your creative process, the evolution between like your first album and the second album?
Yeah, I think with the songs on Nomahegan, I wrote a lot of them, not necessarily in one sitting, mm-hmm. but like one try. And then I didn't go back and edit them. I just like they were the way they were and I recorded them and I released them. With Company, I was a little bit more methodical about like really looking at the lyrics and pinpointing like, okay, is this the word that I want to use in this line or do I want to use this mm-hmm. word? And is this the rhyme structure that I want? Like, I think because at that time I was in Thinking Outside the Blocks and it was making me think a lot more, you know, analytically about my song. So I was rewriting and rewriting and rewriting until I was, you know, satisfied. So lyrically, I think Company, I don't want to say it's better necessarily, but I think I was more, there's less that I'm angry about when I listen back to it. With Nomahegan, I'm not angry at Nomahegan, but you know, I've grown as a person and as an artist. And of course, right. There's things that I criticize about that first attempt, but that's how it should be. So, okay, quick side note. When I was in college, my first laptop, okay, rewinding even further. When I was a senior in high school, I opened a fortune cookie after my family had Chinese food.
Mm-hmm.
And the fortune cookie said, every artist was first an amateur.
I
really liked that idea. Yeah. And I taped it to my laptop, which I had for like, oh God, at least 8 years. And I thought I saved the fortune cookie or the fortune, but I may have lost it by now, but I always keep that idea in the back of my head. So mm-hmm. I always like if ever I'm listening to a song of Nomahegan or I listen back to a performance that I did, you know, 8 years ago and I'm like, oh, I'm sharp or like, oh, I rushed the crap out of that song. I don't criticize myself too much because you have to start somewhere and, you know, you're not making your best art when you're 18 years old, mm-hmm. you know? Maybe you're making it when you're 55, when you're 80, when you're 40. Like, you know, my goal is to just keep getting better, so.
Yeah, I love that. And it's actually like you're able to see how much you've grown by recognizing, yes. like, oh, wow, I would never make that mistake or whatever, you know?
Yeah, and I think about a year ago I happened upon a video of Ed Sheeran performing, like, probably, you know, 13 years ago. In London, you know, before he was really big. And, you know, he was just another guy singing and playing guitar. He was like a little pitchy at times. And it made me feel so much better. It's like, okay, because sometimes I compare myself right. to other people who to me are like, you know, a god.
Yeah.
But then you realize, no, they're also human and they also have had growth as an artist. So, you know, nobody's perfect from the get-go. And you're not supposed to be perfect anyway.
Yeah. And they were an amateur once.
They were.
Yeah.
They were. Yeah.
I think that's what's so cool about like songwriting and releasing albums is you can see the growth in mm-hmm. both in you as a songwriter and you as a person. And I feel like that was yeah. really true with you, with your, like, even the content of the things that you were writing about in No Mohegan and Company, like just the sophistication mm-hmm. of like your thought and the life events really that you're talking about have like matured and yeah. changed.
Yeah, which is, I always like kind of make fun of myself because I'm so bad at taking pictures and like keeping albums. Like, because when I'm 80, where are all my pictures? Like, I don't have physical albums. Like, I'm just trying to think, like, how will I organize the decades of, well, years of photos that I have digitally? They're all scrambled. They're all, half of them are on external hard drives, blah, blah, blah. But then I'm like, well, I have my albums.
Yeah. That are good, seriously.
Like, you know, mile markers of my life.
Such a cool way to like just capture what's going on in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. I won't be able to see what I looked like when I was 25, but I could hear my voice.
There you go. So where do you get your inspiration and ideas?
I think the biggest thing, or one of the main ways that I get inspiration, is through improvisation. Mm-hmm. So, and that's always on an instrument. You know, if I'm at the piano and I'm playing songs that I know, a lot of times I'll just kind of dive into making something up. And sometimes that, you know, whatever that made up thing is, just existed by itself. And then sometimes I'm like, ooh, no, I like that. Okay. And it's making me think of this lyric, or like this lyric comes to mind. Oftentimes, the first lyric that comes to me for a song is either the title or it's like the main message of a song, or like the main line or something. It's not every time, but a lot of times that does happen for me. And I've also realized that like being on a train, just being able to have a space where I have no other option but to sit with my thoughts, that can be really big for me. And usually in those moments, I don't have an instrument, but it's lyrics that will come to me. So yeah, trains are good. Otherwise, yeah, just giving me an instrument. A lot of times too, if I like feel happy, or like I feel like I've accomplished something in my life, like I did all of the errands I was supposed to do today, then I'm like, okay, now I can be creative because I have nothing else life-wise like weighing on
me.
So it's a little bit more liberating.
It's like keeping presence of mind in mm-hmm. a way. Yeah, it's funny. You reminded me of a course I took where this professor was pointing out that luck is really just being present, because and letting opportunities that are there come in, versus being uh-huh. so like focused on either an outcome or something that like is on your to-do list in your mind. So it's like your experience of being on the train and just, you know, having nothing to do but be present is a time when you are actually able to take in like the ideas or be in touch with them, which is really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, I think a lot of people, well, and myself included, sometimes feel just so like I have to pass the time. So I'm going to go on my phone and I'm going to scroll Instagram or Facebook. I purposefully like try to not do that. Or if I'm like waiting at a doctor's office, or I'm at a stoplight, you know, anytime where your first instinct is like, oh, let me look at my phone and like check my notifications, I try not to do that. And I just like sit. I just sit with my thoughts. But it does, it helps, because it clears the cobwebs. And honestly, it's like, what good is scrolling going to do for my brain when I could be like processing something right now? And I could be processing like a life thing that happened or I'm anxious about, or I could be, you know, processing an idea. So I think it's important to give the brain like space to just like sit and be, which is a quote from the last song of my first album.
Right. Totally. I'm like, I'm sensing Dogwood Tree quotes, lyrics we could throw in here. We're going to play that in the background.
Nice. The podcast, okay.
For sure.
Up in the Dogwood Tree, I found a piece of serenity. And in my growing years, I didn't.
I think actually space is an ingredient for creativity.
Mm-hmm. Like the physical space around you, you mean?
I was more thinking mental space, but in what ways is physical space important to you?
I have realized, okay, I lived in Hoboken for 4 years and we were in a railroad apartment that didn't have a lot of natural light. And for the first year or two that we were there, we loved it. It was great because we were finally able to live together, and like that in and of itself was exciting and great. But then at the tail end of the pandemic, that space just became so like stale to me. And I very rarely felt inspired. It was like I was also working for my full-time job in the space that I had my studio. So that space then became synonymous with work, job, stress, like all of that, instead of like, this is my creative space. So I kind of thought to myself, well, when I move, I need to have two separate spaces. Like I need to have a space that's just for creativity and play and practicing and all of that. So now I'm in a dark basement, but I need to do things to like spruce it up and like have a rug and have pictures, and I want to paint like a mural on
the wall.
Like colorful. I need color.
Color
is big. Candles are big. Lighting is huge for me. I like to have like neon lights.
Yeah.
Not neon, but like the fun little ones that you can buy online.
No, I love it. So we'll give that space a makeover. But it is interesting that really weighed on your process once that space kind of got stale to you.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, so earlier you mentioned Joni Mitchell being a source of inspiration, and I think one of the big concepts in creativity is great artists steal. So talk about that a little bit, like who have you studied and in what ways are you similar and different? Like what have you noticed about how you're like, you found your own style through those people?
So Joni is definitely a big influence for me, but I didn't really get into her until like my, you know, early to mid 20s. I had like peripherally known of her, you know, I knew A Case of You, maybe I knew River as a kid, but like really didn't know her catalog or anything about her life. And then I read an autobiography that was really good. Yeah, she's just the way that she uses her voice. I also love that, like, she was a woman who was playing an instrument to accompany herself for her own songs as her own solo artist, like decades ago.
Yeah.
That was huge, huge. So I think that I look up to a lot. Like, I really look up to women who write their own songs, perform. They can perform with a band or without a band. They can accompany themselves on multiple instruments. Like, she played dulcimer, she played guitar, she played piano. You know, I think there's a lot of similarities between the two of us, just in that regard. But musically, I think I definitely have a little bit of a pop influence too, just because of like Ingrid Michaelson and Sarah Bareilles. Like, I'm huge fans of their music. Billy Joel, like, I love playing his stuff on piano. And singing wise, Ella Fitzgerald is my all-time favorite vocalist. Yeah. So, and not that my style is very similar to the kinds of things that she sang, but like outside of my own music, I love American Songbook stuff. I love jazz standards. I love singing them. I will just put her on at full blast and sing along and try to mimic every tiny little twist and turn she does with her voice because it's so cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. And what about Ed Sheeran and your use of the loop pedal?
Oh my God, yeah.
Because I feel like it's so interesting to hear you talk about like Joni Mitchell. Like, I know she's a big influence of you, but I didn't realize that it's that you were so infatuated by her being able to perform solo without a band which mm-hmm. I feel like you do so well. What use that the loop pedal, which is such a key part of you, of like the things that you can do that are so different and unique from really anyone I've seen live, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I've seen Ed Sheeran a bunch, probably. Well, I mean, for me, a bunch, probably 5 or 6 times at a couple different venues. And I'm trying to think of when I got my first loop pedal, but I think it was like 2017, I want to say. And it was definitely inspired by him. I even got the same guitar, Martin guitar model that he uses or used back then. So yeah, I would just, that was my first apartment in New York. I barely had room to like set up a microphone, but I had a mic, this tiny little amp, and this Ditto X1 looper, and I would just practice, you know, looping my guitar. Actually, yeah, I didn't even have a microphone. I just had the little amp and the loop pedal, and I would practice looping my guitar. And I started, like, learning his songs, like Shape of You. Mm-hmm. No, it was stuff that came out before Shape of You. I forget the first song. But No Diggity was probably one of the very first songs that I started, like, looping. And then in time, I got a new loop pedal. I was able to loop my voice. I'm able to do 2 different tracks and, you know.
Replaced your background singers.
Who? I never heard of them.
Replaced by technology. Never thought it would happen.
No. No, but honestly, I prefer singing with other people and not into a microphone, not with headphones, mm-hmm. not with stage monitors, and you can barely hear the other people. I prefer singing with people in just an acoustic space. Like, that is mm-hmm. the best. Mm-hmm. There's no substitute for that.
Yeah. But it is – but I will say, like, it is – really incredible to see you up there with the loop pedal, and it sounds like you have an entire full band behind you and it's just you.
Oh yeah, I do. I love it.
Really impressive. Talk to us about like the discipline behind songwriting and kind of working on your craft, like getting yourself into flow state to like practice. What are some of your like core tenets that you do, and how do you enforce those with yourself?
I wish I could say I've been really disciplined, but recently I haven't been. It's just okay. Like, I have to be okay with that and give myself a little grace. But yeah, songwriting, honestly, my default is that I write when I feel inspired. Mm. That could be 3 times in a week. Mm. It could be 3 times over a 2-month period.
Interesting.
But I know that I want to be better about that, and I want to sit down every day and either journal for 10 minutes or do a 5-minute songwriting exercise or force myself to finish the second verse of a song that I'm in the middle of, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's a work in progress.
Well, but it sounds like you do have like intentional practices of mm-hmm. not pulling your phone out, like you said, in lines and stuff like that, like where those sounds like are times when you're very open to like what ideas are coming to you. And letting, like, giving space for inspiration.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So, okay. So how, when you were talking about stringing words together and that being a creative process, it brought this to mind. But mm-hmm. now we have ChatGPT, this AI mm-hmm. language model that is writing a lot of things itself, and people can prompt it and can write songs. How do you think about that, like, as an artist? One, as a tool, like using it within your songwriting, or do you use it at all? And then secondly, as continuing to build your skill set up and not be reliant on it. And maybe it's even a question for like, you know, how would you advise younger songwriters who are starting off with the tools available? They're probably starting to use this a little bit, but then how do you continue to also make sure that you're doing the exercises that will like hone the creative side of your brain as well?
Right. I think we need to demonstrate to people that like the act of expressing yourself through a creative means, let's say songwriting, for example, is so important to your spirit or, you know, your humanity.
I
like
love that.
You need to do that to connect with yourself, to connect with other people. Like, sure, some AI could write a book, but like we need to do that ourselves also. So it can supplement the work that we do. AI can supplement. But at the end of the day, I like if I was talking to a kid, you know, I would tell them, yes, you can use this to help you, but it can't totally replace your own creativity. And I definitely see AI like helping with like jingles, and maybe they're going to stop hiring songwriters for jingles because you can pay probably $0 to have a machine write a jingle for you. But I don't think, like with original music, I don't know. I would always much rather listen to something that came from a human than from AI. But I'm sure now or within the next year or two, we won't even be able to tell the difference.
Yeah.
It's really hard to answer because, yeah, honestly, I don't know enough about it yet to have a fully formed response. Yeah. But I mean,
it's real time. It's evolving.
Yeah.
But I think your answer of creativity is a fundamental human need.
Yes. Yes.
We need to do it in order to be in touch with ourselves and survive. Yep. And earlier you were talking about putting out one of your albums and like not, I think it was No Mojiga, and you were saying like, I'm not even sure like what it's going to be in the world. Like, how do you think about like attachment or detachment to the outcome of what you're putting out?
Yeah, that can be tough because there's always like this little seed of hope in me whenever I release music that like, oh, this is going to be my big break. You know, somebody's going to find my song and they're just going to hire me for life as a musician and I'll have so much money and everything will be great. But as soon as I think that, I have to stop myself and say, no, whatever this music is, because you know what? Every time I've had that thought, I've been disappointed that it hasn't happened. Mm. So I'm like, stop thinking that way. But that gets replaced by hope every time a friend texts me and says, hey, I've been really listening to Life Will Find a Way, or that lyric in Dogwood Tree, like, you know, really hits me, or I really love the melody in No Mojiga, or, you know, something like that. When it's one person who is moved by a song, like, that is enough for me. So as long as that keeps happening, all the other outcomes, it's whatever. It is what it is. And I think it is cool, too, to have music that at first exists in your head or your heart, and then it exists on a computer somewhere, and then it exists out in the world once you release it. Mm. And it's not yours anymore, or it's not mine anymore. It's the listener's, and it takes on a life of its own. So that in and of itself, I think, is really cool.
Yeah, I love that. It's kind of even tying back to your answer to the last question of, like, again, creativity is a human need. So it's not about the outcome. It's about doing it.
It's about doing it.
Doing
it. Yes, yes, yes. Just do it. You got
to
do it.
It's very helpful because it is a constant reminder that you need to have. So, okay, here's another. This is a really good question. I'm kind of proud of it.
I can't wait because you're smirking.
Have you read the book Big Magic?
No.
Okay, you should read it. You would love it. So it's Liz Gilbert, and actually Rick Rubin wrote about this in his book. But so she believes if an idea gets abandoned, it will find another maker. So I'm curious, like, do you believe that? And then two, has it happened to you? Like, has there been an idea for a song or something that's like gotten away and then you've seen it elsewhere and you're like, oh man, that was my idea?
Oh yes, absolutely. Oh my gosh, well, I'm gonna have so much trouble thinking of what it was, but it's happened to me multiple times.
Yeah.
And the things I've seen on TikTok are like, I had that idea before TikTok even existed. And I'm sure we all have that to a certain extent, but yeah. Shoot, I can't think of a particular example, but oh, like misheard lyrics, like, I don't know, I've always thought about doing a video compilation of all of the funny misheard lyrics that I've had, you know, for like 15 years. I've never heard of that idea before, but it's really interesting because it's you hear a lot of creative people talk about how sometimes it's like, you know, it's like you've opened a channel to the universe and things just come to you.
Yeah.
You're not digging for them and finding them. Sometimes an idea just finds you. So I think there's probably a lot of truth to that, because there's definitely been times when I've been writing songs where I'm just like, or it's something else entirely creative. It's not songwriting. And I'm like, where did that come from?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? So yeah. Interesting.
So, like, I feel like Brandi Carlile talks about this a lot in her book, of like the connection of spirituality and songwriting and like self-exploration. I'm curious, mm-hmm. like, to what extent that applies to how you think about your music. Like, is it a source of spirituality for you?
Oh, I definitely think so. And what I think about, too, is how spiritual, and not in necessarily a religious, like a particular religion's sense, but singing together with other people, I think, is very spiritual. Mm-hmm. I think the most amazing moments that I've had as a human are when I'm like singing with a choir.
Yeah.
And singing really good choral, like sacred choral music. So yes, I think there is definitely something to be said about music. And for me, yeah, songwriting, I think it is a spiritual practice. Even if I don't like sit down and think about that before I write, it's not like I'm praying and I'm opening myself to the spirit world. But I think inherently there's definitely a connection there.
How do you deal with criticism? Like, so when you publish your work into the world, you're opening it up to critics, to judgment, to, you know, and also some of which you might want to listen to and use to like get better, hone your craft. Mm-hmm. But others that you won't. So how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think I remember when I put out No Mohegan, I won't say who it was, but somebody told me that after they didn't finish listening to it because they were bored. Mm. They were bored with the music. And I was like, oh, that was like a dagger through my heart. Yeah. I was mad. I wasn't mad that they were bored because I understood. It's a fairly sparse album. And unless you know me, you honestly don't have that much connection to the song because it's very, the songs are very personal. Mm-hmm. They're very much about me and my life and la 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 la. So, but I was also pissed that he told me that. I'm like, you could have had that reaction, but just not said anything because that's just mean.
Right.
but then I came away from that and I was like, you know what? That's okay. I'm actually grateful for that because I need people's feedback who don't know me, who mm-hmm. don't just want to placate me and say, oh, Kelly, it's amazing. Yes, we love it. We love it. I want raw, honest feedback because mm-hmm. that's the only way that I'll get better. If you have people around you that are just yesing you to death, you're not going to grow because you're just going to be complacent. So I'm thinking back, I'm glad that he said that because when I went to make Company, I was definitely more intentional about, I want this to be a bigger sound. I want the arrangements to be more intricate. I want it to be more interesting melodically, you know, arrangement wise. So yeah, I think now it's coming from a place of like, do I trust the person giving me critical feedback? And if I do, I will listen to them. If it's just some random person who's just trying to be mean, then I just don't, you know, I don't take that and run with it. And that's okay. Everybody had like, also, I think you have to put out your art into the world knowing that not everybody's going to love it. Mm. And you have to be okay with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So being okay with not everyone loving it and being careful mm-hmm. about who you're taking the feedback from. There's someone that you trust.
Yeah. Because, and I just, in listening to like other people talk, like Sarah Bareilles, and I don't know, just people have reminisced about earlier critics in their life who have said, you'll never make it as a singer. You'll never get signed to a label. You'll never do XYZ. Oh, and then look, 10 years later, they did it. There's right. always going to be dissenting voices. So I think you don't have to believe everything that people tell you. If you know inside yourself what you want to do and what you're going to accomplish, then go effing do it.
Yeah, go effing do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one thing that's very closely connected with creativity is flow state. How do you get into flow state and do you do anything specific to set the conditions to do that?
I think sometimes it's just a bit of luck and happenstance. I never purposefully set conditions, but if I'm in my like studio or creative space and I have my instrument and I start improvising, a lot of times I just go there. And I think it's really important for me and anybody to be open to being in a state of play where just go explore. There's no bad idea. There's no bad melody. There's no bad lyric. Like just have fun and play within the sandbox of sound. So yeah, but in terms of like how and when I get there, there's no necessarily magic recipe that I'm like, oh, if I turn this light on and if I stand in this corner of the room, like it doesn't work like that for me. I think it's just you have to be open to it and yeah, play and improv.
And you talked about improv earlier, saying that that was a something that leads you there. Well, it's really interesting because like in flow state, your entire brain is not active. Like often like some of your prefrontal cortex is shut off so that like some of the further back parts of your brain are more engaged. And so like when we did this in like the corporate innovation setting, we would sometimes throw in an activity like something playful that would help people get into the state of flow. Which is really interesting. But I feel like for you, you're not like, sitting down and being like, I am going to write a song. You're instead like, I'm gonna have fun, improv a little, look out at the park, and see what happens.
Yeah, totally. And that reminds me that Ed Sheeran has talked about how when he got to points recording his album, he would need to take a break and he would play with Legos. Legos love were like my thing growing up. Yeah. So I think, yes, being able to sort of turn off your brain and do something else, like not your craft, but do something sort of mindless and fun can free you to,
So that's, I got to get some Legos. It's literally like a psychological part of it. It's like you have to turn off the part that's like so focused on what you're doing.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I think that's why stand up for me is great because like I'm hearing somebody like I'm listening to somebody else make art that I get to laugh at and have like have fun with.
Yeah.
And it turns off everything else because I'm just absorbing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love it. Maybe to kind of wrap it up.
No. Just kidding.
When you started off talking about your parents, you said, you know, your dad is not someone who he says he's not musical or creative, but you're like, no, you totally are. Do you believe that you know, creativity is within all of us? And if so, how would you like encourage people to tap into it?
Yes, I do believe creativity is within all of us. Even if you just think about speaking, or whether you're speaking or whether you're signing an ASL, like whether you're just thinking thoughts, like that in and of itself is creative. Like you are stringing things together in a different order than somebody else would. So yes, I think we're all creative. And, you know, there are so many different ways to be creative. You can write, you can paint, you can be a culinary master, sewing. Yeah. And I think that's the key is some people say like, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm not creative. No, you are. Mm-hmm. You just might not realize the thing that, you know, you're creative with.
Your creative expression. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. So keep trying to find it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Thank you so much, Kelly, for being here. On that note, we'll end for the day and appreciate you being here. And can you plug where can people find your music? And, you know, if they want to learn more about you, where can they go?
Sure. So you can find my music on all of the online spaces, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Pandora, etc. You can follow me on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, or YouTube. My handle is at Kelly Bruno Music. Kelly with an I, Bruno with an O. And then my website is kellybruno.com.
Love it. Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jenna. This has been so fun. It's really great to talk about creativity. And I'm grateful that you chose me to be on your new and exciting journey of a podcast.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kelly Bruno. Let me know what you thought of it and what lessons you took away by leaving a comment on the Lessons in Creativity Instagram page. Thanks so much, and stay tuned for more lessons.